Greetings once again to all of you out there from right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We look back on the week that was, we look forward on the week to come, all with an eternal perspective, and we go worldwide to a worldwide audience unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media. And I want to thank God right off the top for other people. Now, hear me out on this. Hear me out. I want to thank God for all you other people. Because if it weren't for all you other people, no one would listen to this show. And no one would be able to do business. It's amazing that God has been so merciful as to allow so many people to be born without at some point in the not too distant past just looking down and saying, forget all this, and moving on to the next phase. Thank you, Lord, for all of that. Now, I'll be the first to admit that other people are not always at the top of my Christmas card list. I mean, other people are a little odd and generally hard to take. But then I remind myself, to other people, I'm other people. And I'm probably that way too. So, well, let's just leave it at that. Thank you, Lord, for all the people that you've populated the planet with. And that brings us, well, and I don't know how this story fits into what I just said. But, hey, I got to start where I got to start because the news is what it is. Dateline, Minneapolis, Minnesota. The Minnesota Vikings-New York Giants game has been moved to a Monday night kickoff in Detroit after the Metrodome's roof collapsed in a snowstorm early this morning. That's right. The Metrodome's roof collapsed. And they're going to have to go play in Detroit. First of all, my condolences to both the Minnesota Vikings and the New York Giants for having to go to Detroit. That's never fun. The roof collapsed. The roof collapsed. The roof collapsed not long after Minnesota's inflated quarterback, Brett Favre, collapsed and began his journey toward a Tiger Woods-like status in the pantheon of sports dirtbags. I mean, could there be a more fitting event to crystallize the state of the Vikings organization and Brett Favre in particular than a roof collapse there at the Metrodome? I mean, it's just sad. It's funny because my extremely attractive audio engineer, she is no fan of Brett Favre, to put it simply. And it has nothing to do with football. It has to do with his penchant for infidelity. And she was off in Japan when Brett Favre, well, let's say he had that lapse that involved his cell phone, and we'll just leave it at that. She had no idea about the story. And when I related it to her, you could see it in her eyes that she's been waiting all these years to see Brett Favre go down. And here he is doing it to himself, which is so often the case. Anyway, let's see. Where do I want to? Do I want to go to the Denver Public Schools? Anyway, we're flipping through the local news, and I know there's a local story, but stay tuned, everybody. The local news has a cameraman down with a lunch lady down at the Denver Public Schools, and they've gone to what they call the Fresh Food Initiative, where they buy all their food fresh, and they show the lunch lady there chopping up spinach, and they talk about how wonderful it is, this new fresh food initiative. They're going to feed the little public school victims fresh fruits and fresh vegetables and salads, and they're going to hold off on the pizza and the burgers. Anyway, this this hapless reporter has Miss Lunch Lady prepare him 6 or 7 different little dishes that he wraps in tinfoil, and then he carries them outside into the downtown Denver area, walks up and down the sidewalk saying, "Free lunch! Free lunch!" And he gets a few takers, and as you would imagine, every one of them comments on how delicious the food is that he just gave them. And I'm sorry. Number one, you know that I'm against government schools as a principle, but you cannot judge the taste of a food when you walk down the street and offer it to people for free. Generally, you're going to get someone who's hungry and they're going to eat it. Of course, they're going to think it's good. You gave it to them for free. Free lunch, free lunch. Anyway, it was just embarrassing. It's embarrassing how the medstream media works so hard to prop up the government school edifice that is one of the centers of the destruction of our civilization right now, is the government schools. But let's move on. In a related story, well, it may or may not be related. A man has been decapitated in a horrific accident at a chicken processing factory in Melbourne, Australia. Chicken factory worker Mr. Sarel Singh, just 34 years old, was standing on a ladder hosing down a machine that processes chicken when he was swept into it and instantly decapitated. Now, it's a sad story, but I smell something here. And I'm not the conspiratorial type, but let me just posit a guess that the folks who designed this chicken processing machine, one of the concerns they had when they designed this equipment was that human beings would not be swept into it and be decapitated. So I don't think that function was a part of the machine. And I hope that the governing officials there in Melbourne, Australia, are looking into the death of Mr. Sarel Singh, understanding that the machine was not designed to suck workers into it. So I'm a bit suspicious about that story, but let's just leave it at that, and let's get on to the serious news of the day. We jump into the war file. This is from, yesterday, from Saturday, in Sweden. Saturday in Sweden, 2 bomb blasts killed a person in central Stockholm, and police suspect the bombings are a terrorist crime. They call it a terrorist crime. And they say an Al-Qaeda-linked website has claimed one of its militants had carried out the suicide attack. This is from the local news there, in Sweden, of all places. Let's see. This was Stockholm. Saturday's suicide attack in Stockholm is believed to have been carried out by a 29-year-old man from the town of Tranås in southern Sweden, who appears to be the only one killed in the attack, though 2 people were injured. The police believe that the man's bomb may have detonated early, killing him, dispatching him to Allah, but unfortunately leaving 2 other Swedes injured. And it's just amazing to me how lucky we are here in the West that Al-Qaeda cannot seem to find a competent bomber. And how long will this string of good luck last before it runs out? Well, I hope it continues. And I hope these Al-Qaeda types continue to blow themselves up unintentionally and injure and kill as few people as possible in their hapless efforts to institute the global caliphate. All right. Now, as we have terrorists amongst us, obviously they're in Sweden. They've been trying in New York. They tried over Detroit. They're amongst us. And so our Department of Justice has to speak to the issues. Speaking to Muslim advocates in San Francisco, Attorney General Eric Holder told the group of Muslims that he'd heard from many Muslims and Arab Americans who feel uneasy and singled out by law enforcement here in America. So Eric Holder, reiterated his resolve to prosecute hate crimes while standing behind the methods used in anti-terrorism cases. And Holder received strong applause and a standing ovation from the Muslims in attendance. Attendees said they felt reassured by his remarks on protecting the civil liberties of Muslim Americans. And that's just delightful. I think Eric Holder should have nothing to say about Muslim terrorists. I think it should be the Department of Defense that should be addressing these things. But we do appreciate the FBI's work here from the story right out of the Associated Press. Carefully crafted sting operations by FBI and Department of Justice officials have included plots against Portland, Oregon, Christmas celebration, we all remember that, Dallas skyscrapers, Washington subways, the Chicago nightclub, and New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport. All were broken up, and all, surprisingly enough, shockingly, involved Muslims, young Muslim men. And now this fellow who blew himself up there in Stockholm, we'll have to wait and see, but my guess is he is not a rabid supporter of WikiLeaks who's all upset. He's just another young Muslim terrorist. But General Eric Holder wants the rest of the Muslims who have never come together, speaking as one, to condemn the violence carried out by Al-Qaeda and other Muslim terrorist groups. You know, the general mass population of Muslims has not stood up and condemned it. And Eric Holder thinks, well, that's okay. You folks are just all right by me. And he got a standing ovation. So I think everything's okay in the world. And we can all sleep better tonight knowing that Muslims love Eric Holder. All right. Now, I mentioned WikiLeaks. Can't seem to do a show these days without mentioning Mr. Assange or the WikiLeaks project. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Dutch authorities have arrested a 16-year-old boy suspected of being involved in attacks on the websites of MasterCard and Visa. The 16-year-old, they believe, is associated with sympathizers for WikiLeaks. Dutch police believe he is part of a larger group of WikiLeaks sympathizers behind the so-called denial-of-service attacks in which computers flood a server to prevent it from displaying a web page. Dutch authorities say the group conducting the attacks are doing so under an effort called Operation Payback, in which they're going to block the ability for you and I to process MasterCard purchases, which a lot of times might be a bad idea, because a lot of these online purchases, if you had the opportunity, if the website didn't come up and you had 5 minutes to think about it, you might not buy the thing, whatever it is. Anyway, let's see, the group behind the attacks appears to be a loose-knit collection of people identifying themselves as anonymous. And it isn't clear who is in charge of or who speaks for that group, but they intend to clog up the internet as long as their fearless, skinny, pale leader is kept in shackles there in London. So I guess we can all look forward to a difficult Christmas shopping season thanks to the children of Julian Assange, and I'm not sure how much damage they can do as far as blocking MasterCard charges. Not sure that would be a net negative. But Julian and his associates there at WikiLeaks have already done enough, in my book. They should be snatched and summarily executed. But you know my position on that. So let's just leave all that Wiki stuff aside. I'm getting a little tired of hearing about the story, a little tired of seeing his pasty face, and we'll just move on. Let's go back to the Daily Mail from London. From the Domestic Tranquility File, an update on a story we did last week. From Celebration, Florida, a homeless man has been charged with the murder of a 58-year-old over the Thanksgiving weekend there in Celebration, Florida. David Israel Murillo, 28 years old, beat, strangled, and attacked the victim, Matteo Giovandito, with an axe. So the fella in Celebration was murdered with an axe right there in his home. The alleged killer, David Murillo, says that they had a drunken fight at some point in the evening. When reporters asked the axe-wielding killer if the victim had tried to molest him Murillo told reporters he tried to, and I believe he tried to put something in my drink. And he says that he, Mr. Giovandito, got what he deserved. So, man, what a terrible couple weeks for celebration. You got the first murder. Turns out the fella who was murdered very well may have been a deviant. And, of course, this homeless loser ambling through your quiet town. And then, of course, there was the incident of Craig Fouché, who barricaded himself in his home, shot at deputies, and then killed himself. Well, I mean, the celebration is over down there. Welcome to America, circa 2010. There's no such thing as celebration. All right. The poor folks down there, it must have been difficult. Let's move on into the justice file. Oscar winner Joseph Brooks' son, Nick, has been slapped with an attempted murder and strangulation charge last week in the death of his swimsuit designer ex-girlfriend at the Soho House Hotel. Nick Brooks, whose dad, Joseph Brooks, he's an Oscar winner, by the way, my dear. Are we familiar with Mr. Joseph Brooks? I've heard of Mel Brooks. I never heard of Joseph Brooks, but apparently his son, and Joseph himself, the Oscar winner, was indicted last year on 82 counts of abusing young actresses. Well, his son's now been booked, oddly enough, on attempted murder and strangulation charges in a case where the victim died. Now, you ask yourself, how is it that the victim is dead? And the suspect is only charged with attempted murder and strangulation. Well, a police source said that cops can prove that Nick Brooks choked the woman. By the way, the woman is someone else I'm supposed to have heard of named Cache, who's a 33-year-old Peruvian-born fashion designer. Any lights going off? No. I have no idea who this poor woman was. She certainly didn't deserve this. The cops say they can prove Nick choked her, thus the strangulation charge, but they cannot prove the choking caused the death of Cache. I know, it's ludicrous. The police say, quote, he definitely intended to kill her, but we can't prove that he did. We're not sure if strangulation or drowning caused her death. Well, I'm not a professionally trained investigator, but let me just posit a theory that the strangulation had something to do with her death. I'm just suspecting that. That's my effort to give a tip to the police in this horrifying case. This is from the New York Post, by the way. The Post closes out. They say, investigators hope that more evidence will come in and the charges can be upgraded to murder. Perhaps they'll find a way to link the strangulation and the death. It's like I'm wide awake. Feel like I'm falling. I'm hypnotized. These feelings can't be cased. His gravity is killing me. I can't stand up for feel like I'm falling. It's driving me. My head's about to break. Insanity inside of me. It's like I'm wide awake. Feel like I'm falling. I'm hypnotized. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's so good to have you aboard. Let's go now. And we are often wont to do into the back into the domestic tranquility file. This is from Fox News in New York. Fernando Mateo, president of the New York State Federation of Taxi Drivers, is telling cab drivers that for their own protection, they should profile potential passengers who are black or Latino. Can I hear the collective gasp from the audience? Well, before you get your racial sensitivities all in a bind, let me tell you what's been happening here. Now, Mateo, he identifies himself as both black and Hispanic, okay? So let's get that straight. And he made his comments last week after a livery cab driver was shot several times by a man police describe as Hispanic. So you got a Hispanic fella out there killing cab drivers, or at least killed one. And so the head of the Taxi Drivers Association Federation there, he's telling taxi drivers, be cautious when Hispanics get in your cab, because there's a Hispanic out there who just killed a cab driver. That seems logical to me. But then again, I'm a racist. Let's see, the private cab driver, at last report, was still fighting for his life after being shot at least four times by a robber who stole less than $100 from the livery cab driver. Anyway, despite the fact that there is a Hispanic man out there who has murdered a cab driver, the president of the New York Civil Rights Coalition is outraged at the comments of one Fernando Mateo, president of the New York State Federation of Taxi Drivers. That's right. The New York Civil Rights Coalition called Mateo's comments absurd and racist. Now, I wonder how they feel about the guy who shot the cab driver. I wonder if they think that that was racist in any way. I guess everything's racist to these people. Anyway, if you're driving a cab in New York, all I'm saying is be careful, okay? Keep an eyeball on the people who are getting in your cab, and you should probably be carrying a gun. Although, I don't know if they let cab drivers carry guns in New York. I'm going to hazard a guess that they do not. The authorities there in New York, not friendly to taxi drivers defending themselves against Hispanics, blacks, whites, Latinos, Mexicans, African Americans, Indians, Asian Americans, transgendered Americans, or any American who might want to shoot a cab driver. It's every man for himself there in New York, and the authorities there are making sure that the man who wants to kill you outguns you. I couldn't take that job driving a cab in New York. All right, now let's move on into the politics file. From Manama, Bahrain, from foreignpolicy.com, their cable, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton tried desperately to speak with Iranian Foreign Minister Manoohzer Mottakhi. She tried to catch him twice last Friday, pursuing him both inside and outside a gala dinner here at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Manama, Bahrain. But the Iranian foreign minister ducked her successfully twice. And folks, I don't want to read too much into this politically, but you all know what it's like when you're at a party and there's a woman who's interested, but she's just not that attractive. She's a bit overweight. She's a touch over the hill. She's got a really annoying, droning voice. Who can blame the Iranian foreign minister for ducking on Hill? I mean, come on. We've all done it. Anyway, it's just sad to see that Hillary, she can't even find a date at a party at the Ritz-Carlton with a bunch of drunken foreign government officials. Anyway. Oh, several attendees at the dinner there in Manama, Bahrain, they speculated that Mottakhi is resisting interacting with Clinton, at least in part, because she is a woman. And all I'm asserting is that, at least in part, it's because she's a fairly unattractive woman. And that's all I wanted to say on that. All right, let's leave Hill alone. She's such an easy target. It's sad. I know. I shouldn't do that. All right, deeper now into the politics file. From Havana, Cuba, a cable sent by the U.S. interest section in Havana was released last Friday by WikiLeaks. And it was apparently written by the American chief diplomat on the island, one Jonathan Farrar. It details a breakfast meeting held by the interest section's chief economic officer with diplomats from some of Cuba's main trading partners, including China, Spain, Canada, Brazil, and Italy, as well as France and Japan, both of which are among Cuba's top creditors. And here's what the cable read, quote, "All diplomats agreed that Cuba could survive this year without substantial policy changes, but the financial situation could become fatal within 2 to 3 years," unquote. Yeah, that's what the cable said. And it added that Italian diplomats cited sources within the Cuban government as predicting that the island, quote, "would become insolvent as early as 2011, unquote. Now, the first thing, I mean, it's got to be embarrassing for the Greeks, for the Irish, for General Motors, for Bear Stearns. I mean, I mean, to not be able to outlast Cuba has to be pretty darn embarrassing for all of those poor slobs. Oh, yeah, California. Now, this cable came out before Raul Castro introduced some sweeping changes in which he was going to potentially liberalize the economic situation down there in Cuba. But anyway, a red flag up, ladies and gentlemen. Cuba could be on the verge of an economic collapse, but likely the state of New York will go first. That's just embarrassing for everyone involved, except perhaps the Cubans, who will be able to say, hey, at least we outlasted the Greeks. Come on. Viva Fidel. All right. Deeper now. Into the politics file. This is from NBC News in Chicago. Election officials have scheduled a status hearing for Rahm Emanuel as they continue to sort through more than 30 challenges to his mayoral eligibility. There seems to be a residency issue with Mr. Emanuel. We've covered it before on this show. I'm sure you've heard about it ad nauseum, but stick with me. Opponents say Emanuel shouldn't be allowed to run for mayor because he forfeited residency when he moved to Washington, D.C. Does that seem logical? That once you move from Chicago to Washington, that you're no longer a resident of Chicago? Sounds logical to me. Well, about 30 people have challenged the eligibility of Mr. Emanuel. And Emanuel, of course, according to NBC News in Chicago, says he still qualifies. Apparently, amongst his other amazing qualities, the ability to live in two places at once, taking after his boss, who apparently was born in at least two places. That's as we know so far. And I think he's had like a half a dozen Social Security numbers associated with him. That's Barry Ho, not Rahm Emanuel, but Barry. Anyway, it's going to be fun to watch. But for anyone out there in Chicago who's getting their hopes up that Rahm Emanuel may be taken out of the mayoral race, just forget about it. He knows where all the bodies are buried. He buried half of them himself. So Rahm will be the next mayor of Chicago, whether you like it or not, Chicago. And, well, you're getting what you deserve for tolerating this type of politician for, well, virtually your entire career, Chicago. What's up with you people? That's got to be embarrassing that Rahm Emanuel, foul-mouthed midget, is going to be your next mayor. And I can see why there's probably, apparently there's only 30 reasonable people left in Chicago who are standing up and saying, well, wait a minute. I know Chicago has a bad reputation, but Rahm Emanuel? I mean, can't we find some way? I mean, aside from trying to actually take him out, which they don't want to try that. You don't want to try that with Rahm Emanuel. No. You don't want to get into a tit for tat with Rahm, because you'll end up sleeping with the fishes, if you know what I mean. All right. Now, let's move on from Rahm to his boss, Barry Ho. For new listeners to the show, please know that the term Barry Ho is a term of endearment we use for the President of the United States because it acknowledges in one short term his entire name and his both his African background and his African-American background, all in one simple Barry Ho. He's the man. Now, Barry Ho honored the Nobel Peace Prize winner. And there was a White House statement. This is according to the Washington Examiner. The White House released a statement from President Barry Ho on the awarding of the prize, that's the Nobel Peace Prize, to one Chinese dissident, Liu Xiaobo, who, by the way, is in a Chinese prison. And he is the first person since 1935 to be barred from attending, or at least having representatives attend. In 1935, the prize went to a winner who was imprisoned in one of Adolf Hitler's concentration camps. Yeah. So this is the first time since 1935. Liu Xiaobo suffers in a Chinese prison. He wins the Nobel Peace Prize. So Barry Ho comes out, and what does he say? Here's the quote. Barry Ho came on and said, 1 year ago, I was humbled to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. So there you go. It took Barry exactly 3 words to address himself. Yeah, Barry Ho, within 3 words, as Li Xiaobo suffers at possibly being tortured, certainly not eating well, in a Chinese prison, Barry comes out and gives this inspirational speech. I was humbled to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, an award that speaks to our highest aspirations and that has been claimed by giants of history and courageous advocates who have sacrificed for freedom and justice. Mr. Liu Xiaobo is far more deserving of this award than was I. And then there was that pregnant pause where he was expecting the roar of applause, and you could have heard a pin drop, right? Anyway, Barry continues, quote, Mr. Liu reminds us that human dignity also depends upon the advance of democracy, open society, and the rule of law. The values he espouses are universal. His struggle is peaceful, and he should be released as soon as possible. What? Unquote. Now, what did he say in there? Open society? Open society? Is that what he said? Isn't that what's his name? The money changer? Isn't that his group, the Open Society? What's the guy's name? I'm forgetting his name. The guy Glenn Beck is obsessed with. Rightly so, by the way. I can't remember the guy's name. You know, the guy who broke the Bank of England. You all know who I'm talking about. Anyway, Open Society. Really, Barry? Right there in your speech? I mean, forget the fact that you're talking about someone who's languishing in prison and all you can talk about is yourself. But to talk about the open society is just a little disconcerting. I mean, after all, we're all on to that whole scam, Mr. Ho. Please. And of course, Barry closed with, I regret that Mr. Liu and his wife were denied the opportunity to attend the ceremony that Michelle and I attended last year. That's right, I was there. Did I mention that I won the Nobel Peace Prize last year? Has that already been covered? Are there any questions about my Nobel Peace Prize? And he was escorted from the room, apparently, at that point. Now, the big news, of course, we covered this a little bit last week, but folks, it has happened. Dateline Cancun, Mexico, from CNN, delegates at the Unclimate Change Conference in Cancun approved an agreement early last Saturday morning. We can all breathe easier as temperatures apparently have dropped just due to this agreement. I mean, if you're in Minneapolis over the weekend, you can see the giant success that the unclimate changers have had. The agreement, according to CNN, includes plans to create a $100 billion fund to help developing nations deal with global warming and increase efforts to reduce emissions from deforestation. Mexican President Felipe Calderon said, quote, this begins a new era of cooperation in climate change. They are the first steps in this long and renewed campaign. Thank you very much, said Mr. Felipe Calderon, in being very happy that they've secured, at least on paper, $100 million. $100 million, was it, or $100 billion? $100 billion! He had to be ecstatic. Cristina Figueres, the unchief negotiator at the conference, said the results had, quote, reignited hope in climate change talks. Now, the agreement does not specify what will happen once the Kyoto Protocol expires. They've postponed that debate until... Now, and here, folks, was the main topic of concern for all of the attendees until the next scheduled climate talk in South Africa in 2011, where an agreement's also been reached, as I said, to generally improve the quality of the lobster, the caviar, and the prostitutes. Viva, viva, epe, epe, arriba, arriba, yeehaw! It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am Doug McBurney. We'll have to look up some South African music as we cover the event next year. Although I'm not sure South African music is so readily identifiable as Mexican music. We all recognize Mexican music immediately, especially if we live out west, because we've all been at an intersection when a 1975 LTD pulls up and all you hear is... And then if you roll your window down, you hear... You roll it up. All right, enough of that. Let's delve deeper into the politics file. Ladies and gentlemen, a tragedy in Britain this week. This is from Reuters in London. A British police promise an investigation after Prince Charles and some slut that he was with in a car were caught up in London's worst riot in years. What's that? Oh, they're married now? Are they married?
I guess.
Camilla Parker Bowles? Honestly, I didn't recognize her. Anyway, at one point, the protesters surrounded a limousine carrying Prince Charles and his wife. It's right there it was. Obviously, I didn't research this well enough. Let's see here. Prince Charles was in the car along with his wife, Camilla. The protesters were kicking the doors. They threw white paint on the car, and the couple escaped unhurt, but remain an acutely unattractive couple, and may have escaped. Now listen to this. This is a story you haven't heard. Police suspect, they theorize, that the couple may have escaped due to the fact that their physically repulsive appearance frightened the rioters. When they actually got a look at who was in the back of the car, the rioters were shocked and stunned. And they backed off. Just for that split second was long enough for the car to bolt away out of danger there. So whoever said that being ugly could not be an asset? All right. Now, elsewhere in London that very same day, protesters smashed windows in the finance ministry, daubed slogans on the statue of British wartime Prime Minister Winston Churchill, and threw lumps of rock, paintballs, and flares at riot police, who hit back with truncheons. All right. It's about time someone pulled out the truncheons on these punks. You know, the truncheon is a fairly effective tool against student rioters. If you want to scare them away and you're not as ugly as Prince Charles and that slut Camilla, you might have to whip out a truncheon on these punks. And I'll tell you what, it will dispatch them post-haste. All right. Anyway, I'm a little suspicious and color me conspiratorial. I know early in the show I said I wasn't, but if you listen to the show, you know that deep down in my heart, I am a little bit. And I'm just wondering how it is that the Prince of Wales in his bulletproof limousine ends up in the middle of a riot. And I can't help but suspect that someone in Prince Charles' own little orbit of freaks is probably one of these socialist agitators, because Prince Charles is just a full-blown leftist freak. And one of his friends probably tipped off the rioters because they probably drank at the same bar or hung out at the same bathhouse. And, you know, before you know it, Prince Charles is, well, he's in the grasp of a potentially tragic situation. Anyway, there's a lot of concern that there was a lapse of security and all that, but there's no security on the planet that can defend a wicked person from themselves and the persons with which he has established relationships. So anyway, that's just my little bit of conspiracy for the week. Not really a conspiracy. It just so happens that a lot of the rioters and a lot of the people who hang around Prince Charles, they all look up to the same type of agitator, socialist, propagandist, bring it all down, man, type folks. Anyway. All right. So that lapse in security, but thankfully the prince was spared. And Camilla goes on. All right. Meanwhile, as the world erupts in violence, both from Muslims and from socialist agitators, what is the focus of the United States military? Perhaps the last line of defense against total anarchy and chaos in the world? Well, besides the Chinese. let's say the American military is the second line of defense, the Chinese military being the first line of defense, officially, I think, now. Here's what the United States military was busy with last week. Senate Republicans blocked legislation to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Seek, Don't Smell policy last Thursday. Secretary of Defense Robert Gates said he was, quote, disappointed in the Senate vote, but not surprised, unquote. And the Secretary of Defense urged lawmakers to try again for passage to avoid leaving the issue to be decided by the courts. Our Secretary of Defense, he's got a lot on his plate, most of it regarding sodomy, as the world shakes around him. According to the Wall Street Journal, supporters of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Seek, Don't Smell now plan to bring the measure to the floor as a standalone bill before the congressional session ends. But given the tight calendar and many competing priorities, it is unclear whether lawmakers will be able to move the legislation in the short bit of time left that legislators have there in Washington to destroy the country. They just don't have as much time as they might need. Mr. Gates said, passing the legislation is critical because it will give the Pentagon the time it needs to prepare troops for the change in policy. Now, what exactly is involved in preparing the troops for the change that would allow open, proud, vocal homosexuals to serve in the military? Are there things that have to be done? Are they going to put disco balls in the barracks? That would take some time. Are they going to have classes teaching the troops, the male troops, how to put their boxer shorts on backwards? I just can't understand what it is that we're going to prepare. Do they all need to learn waxing techniques? That would have to be clarified for me before I understand the depth and breadth of what Mr. Gates was talking about, but perhaps I'm just ill-informed. Let's move on from that, which is that's a little disturbing, the fact that our military is finally going to cross that Rubicon from which there shall be no return, at least not in any pleasant way. Let's move to San Francisco, appropriately enough. Serendipitous segue into San Francisco. A transgendered woman last Thursday filed a complaint. I'm sorry, a claim. She filed a... Wait a second. A transgendered woman. Now, can someone tell me, is that a woman who once was a man? Or is that a woman who is becoming a man? Or is it something else? Well, don't think about that too much because you'll tie your brain in a knot. Just walk with me on this. A transgender woman has filed a claim against the California Department of Motor Vehicles, saying the clerk who handled her application for a new driver's license later sent her a letter at home calling her gender change very evil. and the letter also implied that her gender change would, quote, condemn her to hell. Wow. So Amber Yust, the tranny, said that the DMV clerk at the San Francisco office processed her application for a license with her new female name back in October. She has a new female name along with some other accessories. So apparently this is a woman who at one point was a man, okay, and still is a man, really, but she has some new accessories added on, and so maybe some taken off, and now she's a girl. Anyway, Amber Yust, the tranny, she received the letter addressed to her old name, David, 4 days after her encounter with the DMV clerk, and the letter identified the writer as the person who processed her DMV application. Pretty bold on behalf of this DMV workers. Now, folks, DMV workers are not known to stick their necks out or step out there out of their comfort zone very often. But I suppose if you're working at the DMV and you're in San Francisco and you're just fed up with the utter immorality that's engulfing you, perhaps you say to yourself, look, I'm working at the stinking DMV. I might as well say something to somebody before the whole country doesn't get sucked down into hell And what's the worst thing that could happen to me? I lose my job at the DMV. Oh, cry a river for me. Anyway, so this DMV worker stepped up and said, look, you're evil and you're going to hell. Now, keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, that all California DMV employees are trained to be sensitive to transgender Californians who, like Yoost, have attained the necessary paperwork to have their driver's license changed to reflect their new names and genders. So there's the state of governance in California, as the state perhaps beats Cuba. In the race toward bankruptcy, the government is spending a fair sum of money training DMV workers to be sensitive to people with new names and new genders. Well, Yoost's lawyer said that he and the staff members at the nonprofit Transgender Law Center in San Francisco think that the worker who wrote Yoost is a DMV clerk who was disciplined last year for allegedly telling another transgender woman that he did not want to help her and saying to her, quote, God will send you to hell, unquote. That was last year. Okay. Transgender Law Center, Christina Wirtz, a spokesperson, I guess we would have to say in this, if indeed this person still considers itself a person, how long will it be before we have a transspecial humans? If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in San Francisco. And believe me, you'll see it first at the DMV. She's got the jack. 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 Jack, 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 jack. She's got the jack. I'm Doug McBurney. And this is the Weekly Worldview. And I want to get back to this story. I was rudely interrupted by Angus and the boys. All right, let them play for a little while. That's just about enough of that. Now let's get back to the story here, because it is big news, after all. I mean, it made the world view. Got to be big news. Anyway, this Christina Wirtz, who is a spokesperson, is there another word we could use so as not to offend these people if they have decided to cross special lines? I certainly don't want to. Anyway, the spokesman, Christina Wirtz, said the August 2009 incident, the original incident, produced an apology from a regional DMV administrator and an opportunity for the center to provide additional transgender sensitivity training at the San Francisco office. So this is what the homos got out of it. You have a rogue DMV employee telling people that are evil that they're evil. And the Transgender Law Center ends up getting a grant to go train the DMV workers. So it all worked out for the deviants there in San Francisco. But here's what spokesman Christina Wirtz had to say. She's from the Transgender Law Center there in San Francisco. She says, quote, we really gave the DMZ the DMZ. Talk about a Freudian slip. We really gave the DMV the benefit of the doubt at the outset in addressing the previous incident of discrimination. When we first heard that this person was still permitted to be working with the public, when it was known that he harbored feelings of bias against transgender individuals and was actively hostile to them, we were pretty angry. Unquote. So did you catch that, folks? The homosexuals right here in boldface type from the Associated Press are not afraid to say that if you think and are willing to say that homosexuality is evil and that the people who are engaged in it and who teach other people that it's good are on their way straight to hell with jet rockets, they don't want you to be able to work. And now they'll say it right there in the newsprint. They'll say it right in an interview. So as homosexuals pour out of the closet, they push necessarily right people thinking into the closet and out of the DMV, which for this poor slob might be an improvement. For crying out loud, you're working at the DMV. I mean, he's obviously got half a brain. He should be able to get a job, like, you know, with a real, get a real job. All right. Deeper into the politics file. Houston Mayor Anise Parker abruptly walked out of her own press conference at City Hall last Tuesday after reporters repeatedly questioned the homosexual mayor about rumors that she and some other council members are trying to create a majority gay council district in Houston. No way. There's no way that a homosexual mayor would try in the redistricting that's coming up to create a gay district. No. Far be it from Mayor Anise Parker. Anyway, rumors have run wild after conservative councilman Mike Sullivan was removed from his position that would oversee redistricting, and a bunch of freaks have taken it over. A bunch of homosexuals are taking over the redistricting there in Houston, and anyone with any sense who's paying attention to anything knows that there will be a certain district in Houston that's full of bathhouses and gay bars that will suddenly have the ability to seat a city council member. Let's see here. At the press briefing at City Hall in Houston was actually called to address a national award that the Houston Police Department received for addressing mental issues. That press conference overshadowed by the fact that the mayor herself is mentally ill. All right. Let's move on into the culture file. Dateline North Charleston, South Carolina. Authorities say a South Carolina high school student doused himself in a flammable liquid and set himself on fire. This was at the, 16-year-old Aaron Williams doused his clothes with a flammable liquid last Wednesday morning and ran toward the Academic Magnet High School's doors. Dozens of teachers and students saw him on fire. Williams died a day later from the burns. This is what's happening in your government schools. And who's to blame? What's the problem, you might ask? And, well, there's been a survey set out to answer just that question, and let's see what the survey says. From the Associated Press, an AP Stanford University poll on education found that 68% of adults believe parents deserve heavy blame for what's wrong with the U.S. education system. They blame parents more than teachers, school administrators, or the government teachers union. So did you catch that? The average slob out there who sends his kid to the government schools blames other parents for the problems in the government schools. It's parents. Yeah, it's your fault, you people. It's all your fault. Most people who participate in the survey said education in their local public schools is excellent or good. But 67% also believe the U.S. is falling behind the rest of the world when it comes to education. But a majority of parents, this is according to, the Associated Press, a majority of parents see improvement in the system since they were in school. Get this, 55% of respondents believe their children are getting a better education than they did. And three-quarters rate the equality of education, the quality of education at their child's school as excellent or good. Most say their child's school is doing a good job preparing students for college, the workforce, and life as an adult. So this harkens back to the story we did a few weeks ago that indicated a third of all Americans are mentally ill. Because here we've got the parents basically stating that it's the parents' fault. And yet, they still continue to send their kids to the government schools. And folks, that's the heart of the problem. Is that these ignorant, slacker, loser parents continue to abdicate their responsibility to raise and educate their children and hand them over to government slacker workers. Folks, people who work for the government are generally not top quality people, at least not in their chosen field. And if you're going to hand your kid over to someone who's willing to toe the line and follow whatever it is that the overlords force them into as a curriculum, including teaching children that there is no right and wrong, that nobody really knows if God exists, and there's a good chance that you evolve from a puddle of slime, well, then maybe I agree. It is the parents' fault. It is the parents' fault. So if you're sending your kids to the public school, please stop and consider the fact that you're sinning against your child, you're sinning against God, and you are participating in the destruction of the greatest country to have ever graced this planet. Thank you very much. All right. Now, speaking of the government schools, let's go to TMZ. TMZ.com. Miley Cyrus has apparently celebrated her 18th birthday by experimenting with a bong and catching a case of giggles on video. Yeah, did you guys see this? It infuriated me the way CNN presented this story as if it was just something to chuckle about. Here you've got a young lady who is perhaps more influential upon the young teenage girls in this country than anyone. And they've got a video of her smoking a bong, and the reporters at CNN are just laughing at her. You see the guy in the background eating the Frosted Flakes? It's so funny. It's so funny that this icon of America's youth is defiling herself on camera in front of all of them. And they just yuck it up over there at CNN. Anyway, sources now say that Miley was not smoking marijuana in the bong. They say that, let's see here, she was smoking a bong filled with a natural herb called salvia, which has psychedelic qualities. Yeah.
So that's okay.
And by the way, possession of salvia is legal in California.
Legal?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, possession of marijuana is pretty much legal in California. But anyway, it's despicable to see what has happened to this fresh-faced young girl. Who wasn't she like a Disney person or something like that?
Yeah, the Achy Breaky's daughter.
Yeah, that's right. She's the daughter of a...
What's his face?
Anyway, let's move on. So more from the government school file. Lysettia Batista, a Bronx teacher, was elbowed in the stomach, pushed, and fell to the floor as she tried to get in the middle of a fight between two students. Batista was 4 months pregnant and was taken by ambulance to a Bronx hospital where she miscarried her baby.
Oh.
The two students involved in the fight have been suspended. I mean, what do you want to say about that? That carries me to this next story. From Denver, from KDVR-TV, the driver who hit a pregnant woman in a crosswalk will not be charged with the death of her unborn baby. Colorado is one of just 15 states that do not recognize a fetus as a homicide victim. Now, KDVR says that for many Coloradans, it's an issue they've never had to consider. Can someone who kills an unborn child during the commission of a crime be charged with homicide? And they interview some losers on the street. Denver resident Brian Sieber says, quote, "It's not one of those things I think I've thought through all the way because I understand both sides. It's just one of those things I've never actually made a decision on," unquote. Well, guess what, Brian? On Judgment Day, you're not going to be able to say, "Well, I just never thought that through," as God pulls the lever and jettisons you into eternal damnation for being such a moron. Anyway, Coloradans have had to consider the issue. We've put it on the ballot twice, and still the ignorant, unwashed, stupid masses don't even know what we're talking about. There's a reason that the Bible calls people sheep. Unbelievable. Anyway, I've got a quote from Jennifer Mason, person in Colorado. She says, "Here in Colorado, the unborn child is treated as a non-person, even though they are a human being. And in Colorado, people are able to get away with any number of acts of violence against children in the womb." She said, "There should not be any case where a child can be killed and the killer get away with it. Never," says Jennifer Mason of Personhood, Colorado. And I guess we'll have to put it on the ballot again in 2012 so that we can get through to a few percentage points more of the moronic, idiot, stupid people who we're surrounded by. All right. I can't take any more. And on that, I mean, we've got out in Omaha, National Right to Life is now, they're going to sponsor state laws that you can't kill a baby after 20 weeks based on this theory of fetal pain. I just don't care. National Right to Life, we've pretty much missed the boat. I mean, they basically want to talk about when and how you can kill babies. And they're the national right to life. I guess if it's prior to 20 weeks, national right to life really doesn't care. More and more, I'm convinced that national right to life does not want the abortion issue to go away because it's as if it's become their livelihood. And that's just sad. I can't read any more of this story because I might actually become physically ill. So let's close it out, ladies and gentlemen. Just in case you had any hope that the unwashed masses around you were not a direct threat to you, listen to this. Titusville, Florida. Titusville police say a hero turned villain back on December 3rd when he performed CPR on a man and even waited for paramedics to arrive. Authorities say he even comforted the man's wife with a hug, but then stole her purse and her coat before she left for the hospital, where her husband eventually died. I hate to leave you on a downer, folks, but that's all I've got. Well, that's the state of things. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, okay? Yeah. All right. Well, that's it, folks. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, my friends at Denver Bible Church, TheologyOnline.com, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.